So where are we? Leviticus 20, is it?
Yeah, one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, just to back up and put things in perspective, when we finished chapter 16, we finished the Day of Atonement. And then from 17 on, it's a matter of the life of the people of God, shifting somewhat from the sacrifices to life in general. So we went through the place of sacrifices, laws against eating blood, unlawful sexual relations. Chapter 19, the Lord is holy and love your neighbor as yourself. We did that journey through the commandments, beginning from the fourth commandment to enter in there, to the third commandment, to the intro to the commandments, to the first commandment, the second commandment, the fifth commandment, the seventh commandment, eighth, ninth, tenth, and then we wandered back through the third commandment and the fourth commandment. And all of this being part of the life of the people of God. When we get to chapter 23, we will be into the feasts and holidays and Sabbaths, which it will become bigger picture things. But we are in 20, 21, and 22, and I do want to get through enough that we will hit the feasts and festivals and holidays this next session. So that being said, let's begin on this. Chapter 20, verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 2.
Again, you shall say to the children of Israel, whoever of the children of Israel or of the strangers who dwell in Israel, who gives any of his descendants to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones.
And you recall, I believe we went into this last time, that Molech was a Canaanite god, and human sacrifice and child sacrifice were part of the worship that was worship of Molech. And God becomes deeply offended when somebody suggests that, well, this is the character of being God, wanting death. And it is a slander and a lie against him, even if it is a false name of a false god. Verse 3, I myself will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people because he has given one of his children to Molech to make my sanctuary unclean and to profane my holy name. Now, how does it work that going off and worshiping a false god actually makes God's house unclean and profanes his name? And the answer is, to the people of Israel, you're carrying the name of God. You're in relationship with God. If you drag that name into doing this, you have slandered the name of God. And that's a serious thing. Verse 4.
And if the people of the land do at all close their eyes to that man when he gives one of his children to Molech and do not put him to death.
Yeah, then I will set my face against that man and against his clan and will cut them off from among their people, him and all who follow him in whoring after Molech. Now, in the time of Judges, there was an incident where one of the members of a clan did something particularly vile, And the members of that clan, that tribe, did not follow through. And the rest of the tribes of Israel took up war against that tribe. It was almost wiped out. Special consideration was given so that the tribe could be preserved and there could be descendants born to that tribe once again. And you read about that toward the end of the book of Judges. I'm not going to go into the details of what was done, because we don't need to at this point. It's a very serious thing to suggest in any way, shape, or form that God is okay with death. Those that wish to follow death, those that wish to live lives perpetrating death, well, there is judgment. And he will carry it out if we do not. Serious things. Okay, verse 6.
I will set my face against the person who turns to mediums and spiritists to prostitute himself by following them, and I will cut him off from his people.
Okay. Well, again, these are serious things. Not going into a whole lot of detail on much of this because you know why it is wrong, etc., etc. So verse 7, consecrate yourselves therefore and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. What's the ending of that phrase? For I am the Lord your God?
Who brought you out of Egypt.
Yeah. Verse 8.
Keep my decrees and follow them. I am the Lord who makes you holy.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of he is the one who makes sinners holy. And Paul would say in Romans about Abraham, what Abraham found is God who justifies the ungodly. And God who makes sinners holy. That's who he is. Verse 9, for anyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is upon him. In that commentary I got written by Dennis Prager, he says in the history of Israel, there is only perhaps one instance where somebody was put to death for insolence against parents. It was not commonly carried out by the people, but what does God say in the fourth commandment? Honor your father and your mother that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. There is a blessing and a judgment that comes along with our respect of our parents. And that's an important thing to realize in how God has put his world together. We may not see the judgment. It may not happen for a while. But life being lengthened or shortened, that does take place. Okay. Now into punishments for breaking other commandments. Verse 10.
If a man commits adultery with another man's wife, with the wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress must be put to death.
Yeah, which the, if you remember in John chapter 8, the Jews were not going to follow that pattern. They were just going to put the woman to death by stoning. And that's the incident where Jesus bent down and wrote on the ground. And we are not told what he wrote, but it cut them deeply, what he wrote. Verse 11, if a man lies with his father's wife, he has uncovered his father's nakedness. Both of them shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. And these are sins that are way beyond the pale. Verse 12.
If a man lies with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall surely be put to death. They have committed perversion. Their blood shall be upon them.
And there is an assumption in these verses, and that verse is both parties were willing participants.
This is familiar. Does that come up earlier?
I believe it does.
Molech and all that.
Was in it repeats.
It repeats. Okay. He really wanted him to know.
Verse 13, if a man lies with a male as with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. It is a twisting of God's created order. And why did God create us male and female?
Create life.
Yeah.
Procreate.
So that we could join him in making thousands and millions and billions of tiny, tiny little human beings. Because that's a wonderful thing. Lots and lots of tiny little human beings. God likes that. Okay, verse 14.
If a man takes a woman and her mother also, it is depravity. He and they shall be burned with fire, that there may be no depravity among them.
Now, how far can people carry this whole business? Wow. Well, we're still testing that out.
Yeah.
Verse 15, if a man lies with an animal, he shall surely be put to death, and you shall kill the animal. Verse 16.
If a woman approaches an animal to have sexual relations with it, kill both the woman and the animal. It must be put to death. Their blood will be on their own heads.
How far do we push it? Verse 17, if a man takes his sister, a daughter of his father or a daughter of his mother, and sees her nakedness, and she sees his nakedness, it is a disgrace, and they shall be cut off in the sight of the children of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness, and he shall bear his iniquity. Okay. It doesn't say being put to death in that instance. Excuse me. And verse 18.
If a man lies with a woman during her menstrual period and uncovers her nakedness, he is made naked her fountain, and she has uncovered the fountain of her blood. Both of them shall be cut off from among their people.
Which has to do with life.
If they're cut off, what actually happens to them? Are they sent out or away from?
It is not specified. And that's part of what makes this difficult to interpret, this part, because the actual how it was carried out is not said. But remember, in this section, we are talking about the world in its pristine condition. When we're talking about the sanctification of how we live, and you know, that we fall short of that, well, that's just the facts. We fall short. And, you know, how do you know? Does somebody walk in on them and find out? How do you know? These are guidelines that would be very difficult to arrange keeping in the strictest sense. That's understood. That's also a point that that Dennis Prager commentary makes, is that these would be very difficult to follow through on, and that's understood. So God is speaking in certain manners of an ideal, and think Garden of Eden being the ideal. That is not our condition, and you know, the Bible knows that full well. So what do we make of it? Well, we are sinful people. We live in a sinful existence. And how do we get out of this? That's the Old Testament leaving the question hanging till we get to the New Testament with only hints for us. Should we go on? Verse 19. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister or of your father's sister, for that is to make naked one's relative. They shall bear their iniquity. Verse 20.
If a man lies with his uncle's wife, he has uncovered his uncle's nakedness. They shall bear their sin. They shall die childless.
If a man takes his brother's wife, it is impurity. He has uncovered his brother's nakedness. They shall be childless. Except that if his brother dies childless, then he is to take the wife and raise up children for his brother. And the concern in all of these things is to preserve the pristine character of this is what marriage is about, and also the pristine nature of the generating of children and generations and the name being preserved. And so all these considerations coming from an ideal perspective, which we don't live in, and God knows that. But does God modify his opinion about what is pristine and perfect? No. He provides a provision for those who fall short. Who falls short? Everyone.
We all do.
Okay. So we get on to verse 22.
You keep all my decrees and laws and follow them, so that the land where I am bringing you to live may not vomit you out.
That's a beautiful picture.
Well, the phrase vomit you out really does fit some of the things we have been reading, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you shall not walk in the customs of the nation that I'm driving out before you, for they did all these things, and therefore I detested them. So apparently this is not just a list of, here are the things that are wrong. This is, you know what those Canaanites are doing? Verse 24.
But I have said to you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God, who has separated you from the peoples.
Yeah. Now, if you went back and you started underlining all of the, I am the Lord your God, put it in one color, and then when there's a tail on to it, put it in a different color. It might make an interesting study. I am the Lord your God, and it's repeated over and over and over again. And then I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. I'm the Lord your God who has separated you from the peoples. And on and on and on. So you're reaching for colored pencils. Okay. You'll report back, right?
I'm starting now.
Okay,
I'm
you'll report back when you discover things. You shall therefore separate the clean beast from the unclean bird from the clean, and you shall not make yourselves detestable by beast or by bird or by anything with which the ground crawls, which I have set apart for you to hold unclean. Verse 26.
You shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have separated you from the peoples, that you should be mine.
Mm-hmm. And there is a certain something about being his. Read a book where the writer complained about, because he grew up in a certain specific culture, that while the other kids were playing outside, he had to spend hours at the piano. And he writes about it, looking back on it and saying, I've come to the understanding that because my people were different, that meant that there were higher expectations for me. And then he looks back on that time where he had the higher expectations and didn't like them, but says, now I understand. So, verse 27, one more shot at the culture of the Canaanites. A man or a woman who is a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. And so for the entire people to live separated out for God, very significant thing. Followed by, what's chapter 21 about?
Holiness and
rules for the priests.
Do they have a higher standard? I would be guessing yes. Verse 1, and the Lord said to Moses, speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, no one shall make himself unclean for the dead among his people. Verse 2.
Except for his relatives who are nearest to him, his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, and his brother.
Okay, so the uncleanness would be to have anything to do with a dead body, or the handling of a dead body, or the preparations, funeral, burial, etc. And the priests were not to be allowed to do that except when they had specific relatives, close family members. And another exception to that, or his virgin sister who is near to him because she has no husband, for her he may make himself unclean. Okay. Verse 4.
Put that in my pillow. I can use that. He must not make himself unclean for people related to him by marriage, and so defile himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's only his close relatives of his family of origin? Mother, father, son, daughter, brother, virgin, sister. OK. Okay.
How do you make yourself unclean? Surely not by going to a funeral.
Handling. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be making yourself unclean. It would be entering into a house where there was death.
Oh, into the house, because that's where they mourn. But you could mourn.
And that's where they did the funerals.
You could mourn, but not there.
What's the next verse say?
Okay.
They shall not make bald patches on their heads, nor shave off the edges of their beards, nor make cuts on their body. Each of those three were acceptable practices of mourning in all of the cultures around.
Lovely.
Yeah. Cuts on their body. Yeah, they did that. Shaving the head or part of the head. Yeah, they did that, except for the Egyptian priests. The Egyptian priests would shave their heads normally, and then when they were in mourning, they would let their hair grow long. So that's opposite time. Okay, verse 6.
They shall be holy to their God and not profane the name of their God, for they offer the Lord's food offerings, the bread of their God, therefore they shall be holy.
Okay. So we had a verse about death, and then following that with, they shall be holy. And then comes another verse about something different. They shall not marry a prostitute. Oh.
Except Hosea.
Yeah. Or a woman who has been defiled. Neither shall they marry a woman divorced from her husband, for the priest is holy to his God. Part of the consideration there is the exclusiveness of the nature between God and the worshiper of God. So that it's not to be shared. And so the priest does not marry a woman who is not exclusive to him from the beginning and on through. Well, that's a different standard. Verse 8.
You shall sanctify him, for he offers the bread of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I, the Lord, who sanctify you, am holy.
Okay. Oh, and one more thing. Apparently the cultures around did this. And the daughter of any priest, if she profanes herself by whoring, profanes her father, she shall be burned with fire. And all of the commentaries are going, this is not death by fire. This is death by stoning, and then burn the body. Just to have that one clarification. Okay, that's for the priests, but then there is another level to this. Verse 10.
Pastor, what's the significance in stoning? Why would somebody have to be stoned?
Okay, the let's see, who was it that gave this aphorism? I think it was Professor Keel, who said there is an Arab proverb that when God was creating the world, he gave the angels two bags of stones to scatter over the world. And as they flew over Palestine, one of the bags broke. So
that's why Rocky.
They have half the stones in the world. And then he said, you use what's at hand. So the stoning was just using the convenience of the materials you had at hand, in his opinion.
I thought maybe it had something to do with everybody participating.
Mm-hmm. It could. Could also be earth to earth. Oh.
Yeah.
But, no. Stoning was practiced, and I have to leave it at that.
Okay.
Man, if you were lucky, you'd be hit in the head first.
Right.
What a horrible way to die.
Yes.
Yeah. There are plenty of horrible ways to die. Let's do verse 10.
The high priest, the one among his brothers who has had the anointing oil poured on his head and who has been ordained to wear the priestly garments, must not let his hair become unkempt or tear his clothes.
Which again were both signs of mourning. Verse 11, he shall not go into any dead bodies nor make himself unclean even for his father or his mother. Really?
Well, isn't that contradicting what they just said before?
No, that was for the common priests. But this is for the
high priest. Oh, this is the high priest. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, and there's a comment coming along in just a moment. Verse 12.
Nor leave the sanctuary of his God or desecrate it, because he has been dedicated by the anointing oil of his God. I am the Lord.
Okay.
Brought you out of Egypt.
So now to spin off an unexpected direction. Who is the one who is the most anointed?
Jesus.
Who said Jesus? Yeah. Prophet, priest, and king. Anointed order of Melchizedek, anointed above the anointing of any of his brothers, and on and on. And does Jesus then, who is then, he is our great high priest, does he go into a house where there has been death?
Yes.
Can you name an instance?
Lazarus.
Yes.
He went and raised
Lazarus. Yeah. Another instance.
When he healed the girl that had died, and he said
Jairus's daughter. Yeah.
I couldn't think of Jairus's name, yeah.
Does he go up to a dead body being carried out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The widow's son.
The son of the widow at Nain. And in those three instances, he raises the dead. The Old Testament high priest can't do that. His following the pattern of holiness is to stay away from death. But when the great high priest comes, his pattern of holiness is to bring holiness and bring life. Okay. He does not have any compunction on him that by nature he must die either. But he goes there in order to sanctify our tombs. And then we can go on. Verse 13, and he shall take a wife in her virginity. Verse 14.
A widow,
go ahead, Mike.
A widow or a divorced woman or woman who has been defiled or a prostitute, these he shall not marry, but he shall take his wife, a virgin of his own people.
Okay. Verse 15, that he may not profane his offspring among his people, for I am the Lord who sanctifies him. And, you know, there is just an utterly high standard for the chief priest. Okay. On to another topic here. Verse 16.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying,
speak to Aaron, saying, none of your offspring throughout their generations who has a blemish may approach to offer the bread of his God. And a blemish would be a deformed limb, an extra finger, God's going to detail some of this.
So he's not talking about a freckle.
No. Well, verse 18.
For no one who has a blemish shall draw near, a man blind or lame, or one who has a mutilated face or a limb too long.
What? What is a limb too long? I don't know.
Your grandmother.
What? No, she had a short leg.
Okay. But the other one was long.
Yeah, the other one was too long for the short one.
She had a broken hip, and back then they didn't set things the way that they do now, and that leg was that short. Or a man who has an injured foot or an injured hand. And so you could think temporary, yeah. Or it might be permanent. Verse 20.
Or a hunchback.
Okay, Mike takes verse 20. Okay, this is Edred. Go, Mike, go.
Or a hunchback, or a dwarf, or a man with a defect in his sight, or an itching disease, or scabs, or crushed testicles.
Thank you, Mike.
Mine says, is a eunuch.
Yeah, but Mike's version was more fun.
Right, yeah.
The translation he read is pretty darn accurate.
Yeah.
No man of the offspring of Aaron the priest who has a blemish shall come near to offer the Lord's food offering. Since he has a blemish, he shall not come near to offer the bread of his God. But then there is a limit to the separation for him. Verse 22.
He may eat the bread of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy things.
Mm-hmm. So that's okay. He's not cut off. He's just, he cannot serve in certain ways. As verse 23 says, but he shall not go through the veil or approach the altar because he has a blemish, that he may not profane my sanctuaries, for I am the Lord who sanctifies them.
Spell that seems that awful harsh.
What's it mean to go through the veil?
Into the holy of the holies?
I heard two answers simultaneously. What?
Holies and holies?
The Holy of Holies. Okay. Pick up the phrase through the veil, carry it to the book of Hebrews. What is it talking about there?
Yeah.
Who?
Jesus.
He has gone through the veil for us, entering into the heavenly holies for us to make atonement. And so this is very specifically a picture of Jesus, who is without blemish. That's why these things are important, because it becomes a picture of Jesus right at that point.
So that's why no blemish.
Yeah.
Not a civil rights thing, but to be a picture of Jesus.
Yep. And then it says that he may not profane my sanctuaries, plural.
Holy of Holies and the Holy of Heaven. Heaven of Holies, whatever.
What are, is that the full list of the sanctuaries of God?
No, your own body.
Oh. Well, we're talking Psalm 46 now, aren't we? Psalm 46, what's that say? In the Hebrew rendition, God is a refuge and strength, a very present, a well-proven help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitations of the Most High. In the Hebrew, it's plural. The translators got confused by that. They corrected it, assuming that it was a plural of nobility, or a plural of the multiple places within the holy habitation of the Most High, and they made it singular. But the river whose streams, a river flowing from the throne of God, separating into streams to give life to all of God's people, and the city of God then is the people of God. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. Back to Leviticus 1:23, that he may not profane my sanctuaries. For I am the Lord who sanctifies them. There is a bit of a double application here, referring first to the image of the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies, the holy, the two parts of that, the temple, Holy of Holies, and the holy, and then transitioning into, in the New Testament, it is Jesus who sanctifies us. And there's where we go. The concern on God's part to say not to profane his sanctuaries is not so much a care for the stones and the curtains and the physical things, but it is the final application of that to the people of God. Ready for verse 24.
So Moses spoke to Aaron and to his sons and to all the people of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And still, the covenant being established with Moses as the mediator of this setting down of the covenant. And keep on going. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 2.
Speak to Aaron and his sons, that they separate themselves from the holy things of the children of Israel, and that they do not profane my holy name by what they dedicate to me. I am the Lord.
Okay, so this goes back to, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And they're to be separated. Verse 3. Say to them, if any one of all your offspring throughout your generations approaches the holy things that the people of Israel dedicate to the Lord, while he has an uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from my presence. I am the Lord. And yes, this is down to the tiniest detail. Does God have the right to do that?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, he does.
All from page 159.
Okay, verse 4.
None of the offspring of Aaron who has a leprous disease or a discharge may eat the holy things until he is clean. Whoever touches anything that is unclean through contact with the dead, or a man who has an emission of semen.
And whoever touches a swarming thing by which he may be made unclean, or a person from whom he may take uncleanness, whatever his uncleanness may be. Verse 6.
The one who touches any such thing will be unclean till evening. He must not eat any of the sacred offerings unless he has bathed himself with water.
Okay, so this is not a permanent uncleanness. This is for this day. Set apart, then bathe, then everything's okay when the sun goes down. And So verse 7, when the sun goes down, he shall be clean, and afterward he may eat of the holy things, because they are his food. Verse 8.
Whatever dies naturally or is torn by beasts, he shall not eat, to defile himself with it. I am the Lord.
Yeah. So again, the consideration as before was that there was the blood in it, and you respect life. God does love life, love the creating of life, and well, after all, that's who he is. He's the Lord who began the creation because he loves life. And that is perhaps the first and most basic understanding of the character of God, that he loves life. Verse 9, they shall therefore keep my charge, lest they bear sin for it and die thereby when they profane it. I am the Lord who sanctifies them, who takes sinners and makes them holy. Verse 10.
A layperson shall not eat of a holy thing, nor a foreign guest of the priest or hired worker shall eat of the holy thing.
Mm-hmm. But if a priest buys a slave as his property for money, the slave may eat of it, and anyone born in his house may eat of his food. So if you became part of a priest's family, you were marked by that and were included. And this is, and I have to give the attribution. It is Prager who says, this is very unique in the treatment of slaves through the rest of the cultures of the ancient world. They were just property. They didn't have much in the way of rights. But for the Israelites, if a slave became part of a priest's family, he was included. If he was purchased, he was included. He was family. That's pretty special. Okay. Verse 12.
If a priest's daughter marries anyone other than a priest, she may not eat of the sacred contributions.
Okay, so if she came home for Thanksgiving, they'd have to have separate food, I guess. Or the priest would simply serve up the ordinary food for everyone. But if a priest's daughter is widowed or divorced and has no child and returns to her father's house, as in her youth, she may eat of her father's food, yet no lay person shall eat of it. Okay. Verse 14.
And if anyone eats of a holy thing unintentionally, he shall add the fifth of its value to it and give the holy thing to the priest.
Okay. Because I forget some of these comments, back to verse 13. But if the woman does have children, she has established a separate household and she's not able to return to just be part of the family of origin. Dalich spells that out and gives verses from elsewhere in the Bible on that. Verse 15, they shall not profane the holy things of the people of Israel, which they contribute to the Lord. So it is when it is contributed, it becomes set apart. Verse 16.
By allowing them to eat the sacred offerings and so bring upon them guilt requiring payment, I am the Lord who makes them holy.
Yeah. And we've got not too many verses to finish up this chapter. And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, verse 18,
speak to Aaron and his sons and to all the children of Israel and say to them, whatever man of the house of Israel or of the strangers in Israel who offers his sacrifice for any of his vows or for any of his free will offerings, which they offer to the Lord as a burnt offering.
Mm-hmm. If it is to be accepted for you, it shall be a male without blemish of the bulls or of the sheep or the goats. Okay, verse 20.
You shall not offer anything that has a blemish, for it will not be acceptable for you.
So, again, a picture of Jesus. Without blemish, whole burnt offering, given entirely for the forgiving of sins and for sanctification. Verse 21, and when anyone offers a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord to fulfill a vow or as a free will offering from the herd or from the flock to be accepted, it must be perfect. There shall be no blemish in it. Okay, verse 22.
Do not offer to the Lord the blind, the injured, or the maimed, or anything with warts or festering or running sores. Do not place any of these on the altar as an offering made to the Lord by fire.
Surely they wouldn't. Well.
Some people think they have things spelled out for them.
Yeah, you go through your life and you learn that there are people who will cut corners and be cheap in ways that you never would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 23, you may present a bull or a lamb that has a part too long or too short for a free will offering, but for a vow offering, it cannot be accepted. Okay, that's spelling out in detail. Verse 24, who wants to read this one?
Go, Mike.
And Any animal that has its testicles bruised or crushed or torn or cut, you shall not offer to the Lord. You shall not do it within your land.
Okay.
Got it.
Why is this? Because God is the God of life. And everything that has to do with the creation of life, you know, that's his idea, creating life. He loves life. At 25, neither shall you offer as the bread of your God any such animals gotten from a foreigner, since there is a blemish in them because of their mutilation, they will not be acceptable for you. So it's like, no, it was not mutilated on my farm. I just got it from this guy over there. Let me pass this off, okay? Doesn't work. 26.
The Lord said to Moses, when a cow, a sheep, or a goat is born, it is to remain with its mother for 7 days. From the eighth day on, it will be acceptable as an offering made to the Lord by fire.
For 7 days, it was under its mother. It was not to be taken from its mother. Also, 7 days is an acknowledgement of the days of creation. And verse 28, but you shall not kill an ox or a sheep and her young in 1 day. That is disrespecting the relationship of mother and child. And you go to Isaiah, can a mother forget her nursing child or have no compassion on the child of her womb? These may forget, but I will not forget you. Behold, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. The relationship of mother to child, the compassion on the nursing, the compassion on the child in the womb is a picture of the mercy of God. And the mercy of God is right at the center of everything we teach and is so incredibly important that when you violate that, you're violating something at the center of who God is.
I'm sorry, Pastor, what was that? Isaiah what?
I forget the actual.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said it. That's okay.
I've been trying to train myself to remember, where is this? It's before 53. Yes, Isaiah 49, 15 and 16. It's noteworthy when we run into that, as we do in this verse and in the prohibition of boiling a kid in its mother's milk, and our Psalm 82 or 84, the bird finding a place for her young near your altars, O Lord God, my God. That honoring of the relationship where mercy is built into the creation. Tremendously important. And those things seem to come along and just pop up suddenly. But when something does that, you want to make a note of it and say, is there a pattern? Yes, there is a pattern. Verse 29.
And when you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Lord, you shall sacrifice it so that you may be accepted.
Okay. Verse 30. It shall be eaten on the same day. You shall leave none of it until morning. I am the Lord. Wait, what?
It's like the manna.
If you sacrifice a sheep,
how do you eat it all?
How do you eat it all in one day?
You have a feast. Everybody come.
Okay, what was that?
You have a feast and you have the whole family there.
And if your family is too small to eat the whole thing?
You give it to the poor?
No.
That's the only thing.
No,
you can't.
No.
You can't.
If your family is too small, what do you do?
Share it.
How? The sacrifice is to be sacrificed there, roasted at the temple, and eaten there. So what do?
Burn it?
Burn it?
No, no, no. You invite, you say, come on, come on. You got friends, you got relatives, you got neighbors. Call them to the feast.
But I thought they couldn't eat the holy things.
No, that's the priest. The priest would, for the things that were offered to God, that were set apart a portion of the sacrifice. But when you give a sacrifice, and this is, what's the possible things they could offer?
Ox, goat,
ooh,
sheep.
Wait. Sheep is one thing, goat is ox? An ox? You're going to be inviting a few people, aren't you? And you all got a feast, and how many people do you need to invite to eat an entire ox in one day?
Lots of people. But that's not at the temple. That's you sacrifice it and bring it home?
No, that...
That's at the temple?
Yeah. At least here it is.
Yeah.
And if you're now in the Holy Land and you've made the journey to the temple, maybe you bring a whole bunch of your friends. Let's go to the temple and have a sacrifice and a feast because I have something that I want to thank God for. And so they join in the thanking God for. Isn't that interesting? And when you have a feast like that, does somebody get up to speak and say something about the feast? Yes. And if you've come from a distant place to offer to God, who do you invite? Anyone you can find. And there are parables of inviting anyone and everyone you can find to come and join in the feast. So apparently, if there are parables like that, this may have been part of the experience of the people of God, putting together a feast of this kind.
Do you have to make a reservation? What if there's another big group there ahead of you? I mean, I don't know. Just
well, I mean, it's a living feast until it's sacrificed.
Right. So you can hang out.
Just feed it until the time comes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. We're almost done with this chapter. Verse 31.
So you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And you shall not profane my holy name, that I may be sanctified among the people of Israel. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Verse 33, it's a continuation.
Who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God, I am the Lord.
Okay, and that formula is bookended with I am the Lord and I am the Lord. And then it is who sanctifies you, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. And so we kind of end these verses and chapters on a somewhat of a sweet note, don't we?
Yeah, for all that.
Yeah.
Soul crushing.
After all of the detail of how you observe, how the priests observe, how the chief priest observes. And then we're into celebration and feasting.